Welcome to the Being Known podcast with my friend, Dr. Kurt Thompson.
And my friend, Pepper Sweeney.
Pepper who? Oh, I'm sorry.
I just put Kurt Thompson,
who is just now going through puberty. His voice is changing. And so if you hear some cracking in his voice, then that explains it. We are here to discover and explore what it means to be truly known.
I have advanced far in the world for only being 13 years old.
You know what? I will say, for being 13, you've accomplished a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I just stuck some gravel in the back of my throat.
Listen, folks, if, as you hopefully know already, this season we are going through Dr. Kurt Thompson's latest book, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. We have made it through the first four chapters, and today we are venturing into chapter five, which is titled Suffering, the Story of the Present Age. Kurt, I just want to say that I love, you know, reading the book is one thing, but then getting the chance to talk to you about it and hear you talk about it, it just takes it to another level for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well. So thank you for this time that you're giving us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to do it. You know, we're now kind of setting our sights on the target, this notion of suffering. And in this conversation, we're going to, you know, address that more directly. And in the text that we're reading from Romans chapter 5, we get to this part of Paul's writing where he has just come from saying, we boast in the hope of the glory of God. And then he says, not only that, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings. And, you know, we like to say that it's the Christian story that is the only story in the world that actually honors suffering. It does not glorify it. It does not worship it. It does not say it's a good thing, but it honors it. And it honors it for what God does to use it and also to transform it along the way. And in today's episode, we're going to spend some time talking about Wendy and Kent, two folks that we've come to know that I write about in this chapter. Wendy was a woman who had come to our practice after having done a lot of hard work already in her life, overcoming both an opiate addiction and then working through an addiction to food practices. There's a certain sense in which she had food behavior that were really challenging for her. And she came to see me when she had already been in some recovery work with these two features. And it was in the course of beginning to do work with me that she also began to reveal another addiction that came to light and something that nobody else really knew about. She was someone who, in the course of her life growing up, her parents had been at odds with each other a great deal, so much so that her older sister had left home and had never kind of had much contact with her parents after that. Wendy had worked really hard as a student, had gone off to college, and had become not only noticed for her academic work, but noticed for other things in that she found favor in the eyes of a professor.
Right.
And this professor took advantage of her sexually, essentially.
Yeah.
It's not an uncommon thing to have happen. And after this took place, this sense of having been kind of used by someone, Wendy entered into a cyclic pattern of having relationships with men, most of whom were married. And they would be temporary. And even men who would say, I'm going to leave my wife for you. And at the moment that anything would become too close to permanent, even them, she would bolt the relationships. And at some point, she was on a dating app, and she meets this guy, Kent.
Yeah.
And she starts, you know, one day it went from coffee to dinner to plays. And then Kent, who, you know, noticed that this is a beautiful woman, and I'm going to tell her so in an appropriate way. You know, he's making his way toward greater connection with her. And there was a challenge for her in this, in that Kent also had invited her to come to his church,
right?
Which was kind of weird for Wendy because this had never been a thing for her growing up. No kind of a religious exposure at all. But she knew that she liked Kent. Church was a curious thing to her. And so she went. And then she noticed that, you know, she's in a community of people who welcome her, a community of people who are kind to her, a community of people that she'd never really been in before.
Right.
She had kind of known about church as a thing that happened out there in the world for other people. And she also was having a lot of trouble making sense of this dude, Kent.
Right.
Because this is a guy who, though he was very attracted to her, he would not have sex with her.
Right.
And this was, like, confusing to her.
Made no sense to her whatsoever.
No. Because for her, this is how you, like, negotiate these relationships. This is, for her, how she controlled these relationships. Mm-hmm. I can control the guy by offering him sex and how much and how often and all that's going to happen. And I get to decide what the terms are. But that particular bargaining chip was no longer in play here.
Yeah. And she's starting to feel anxious in the relationship and, you know, she's not in control, and Kent notices this anxiety in her and comes and talks to her about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kent, instead of leaving her,
mm-hmm.
which is what she expected when she got anxious, he came closer, which again was not making a lot of sense to her. She does not have an experience of a relationship in which the more distressed I become, the closer you come to me.
Right.
Her experience was, when things get distressing, my sister leaves and never comes back.
Yeah.
And about this time, she, with this anxiety, she makes her way into my office. Now, Kent was not my patient, but Kent was being seen by somebody else in our office, and Kent had already been part of a confessional community. And after seeing me for a few months, she joined a confessional community.
A different confessional community.
A different one. Was not in the same one with Kent.
Yeah.
And she began to do all kinds of work, of course, that was in and around all these things that had happened. What had happened to her with her professor, what had happened to her with this serial set of men that had been willing to use her and then toss her aside. What had happened in her family, her disconnection from her parents and from her sister. And what was really striking about her was how hard she was doing the work. She was working really hard at this. And then there was this one day in confessional where she gets started and she just like starts in and she just kind of like at the top of her voice, like, I can't keep doing this. Now, of course, everybody immediately kind of leaned in and they're curious and puzzled because this that she had been doing that we witnessed was work that was her relationship with Kent continued to grow closer. She encountered Jesus in the church and was continuing to work to solidify that experience. But what she couldn't keep doing, what was difficult for her, and what is hard for many people, what's hard for all of us, is this sense that I thought I was identifying my problems and that I'm coming here and I'm going to like take care of that, and that's no longer going to be a problem. I could identify my suffering, the sources of my suffering, and now that I've done that and I've done work, I would think the suffering would stop.
Yeah, I understand her frustration, right? I mean, you know, stuff comes up and you think, I've dealt with that already. Why is that coming back up?
Right, exactly. And one of the things that we come to recognize is that, yes, it is true that there are things that we can do that lead us to growth, such that we often are transformed and we are not suffering in the way that we used to. If I'm suffering because of my addiction to porn or my addiction to cocaine or my addiction to work, all of those addictions create suffering for me that if I move out of them, reduces that suffering. There's no question about that. But what does not change, what does not reduce, is the fact that there will always be things for me to continue to work on. And there will always be moments when old things that I thought I've put away will circle back around and want to try to haunt me again. I'm reminded of those patients who have worked really hard for many years only to realize that they are still in families where they have parents who continue to behave badly and continue to poke the bear who continue to go back and try to rip off the scab of the wound, go back and continue to be difficult. There's a certain suffering that comes. We think about the character of Eustace in Voyage of the Dawn Treader, who comes to the pool, and Aslan comes and he starts to peel off these layers of scales. And it's a painful process. And it's not just one layer of scales. It's multiple layers of this. And so we come to find that this notion of, I can't keep doing this, is a phrase that sometimes, if we're serious enough about doing the work of following Jesus and leaving behind our old selves, this is a phrase that we may occasionally come back around to if we are taking our work seriously, just as Wendy was taking her work seriously, but thinking that somehow I'm going to get to a point where suffering is no longer going to be a thing for me in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And what we come to find out is that the more seriously we take the gospel, the more seriously we take this notion that God is turning us into these bright lights, into these outposts of beauty and goodness, the more evil will resist us, and the more we will have to push against the darkness. It may not be the same thing in the same degree, but there will be things within me that I will continue to have to deal with. And this suffering, then, is what we're now going to turn directly into address. This is what Wendy was having to contend with. She had experienced suffering in the number of different ways that we're going to talk about. And what she was hoping for, of course, was that it could just go away. Something that we discover is that to be human means that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Right, yeah. And it's the one thing that so many of us want. Just make it stop, right?
Right, I mean, you know, I wrote, I think, in the opening pages, like, I think I would only want to read a book about suffering if it would tell me how I will not have to do it after, you know, there will come a point where I won't have to do it anymore. So what we see then through Wendy's story is that suffering is not a defining quality of life, but it is a way of life. It does not define us, but it is something that if we take our lives seriously, we will discover is going to be present. If you're human, suffering is what happens. It's also something that I will do just about anything to avoid. I will create all kinds of opportunities for myself to avoid it. I create all kinds of idols, whether it's the food that I eat, whether it's the coffee that I must have with the certain ingredients that I want to have every day. If it's the routine that I like to have, whatever my idols are, if it's my privately held grudge about certain people, that keeps me from my suffering. But there may also be other things that we suffer with that we just can't avoid. We can have medical things that are happening to us. We can have physical things that are happening to us. We can have things that have happened. This is a public event. We know about this. Our pastor and his wife and their daughter lost their son to suicide this past year.
Mm.
That's not going away.
Mm-mm.
Right? These are not things that go away, even though I try to do things to avoid it. Sometimes I find all kinds of questions to ask to avoid it. Why did my son not come home from Iraq? How did that happen? Why did he do that? All the questions that we ask are really ways for me to avoid the feeling, the emotional state of my suffering.
Okay, people, we have been working on something really exciting we want to tell you about. The Center for Being Known Connections Conference 2024.
Our theme this year is Imagination to Incarnation, and we could not be more excited about this. Moreover, this is going to be a two-day conference event, live in person and virtual.
This event is packed full of great stories of art, music, plenty of connecting time built in with lots of confessional community opportunities. It features an amazing lineup of speakers and breakouts. Plus, we are having a very special live Being Known podcast recording as part of this event. And now, okay, Kurt, I'm going to name a speaker that's coming, and you give me one sentence that describes them. Jessica Honegger.
Okay, first of all these speakers are good friends of mine. I cannot believe the honor that I get to introduce Jessica to this community. Jessica Honegger is a businesswoman, a visionary, and someone who at the very core of who she is has a commitment to use her capacity as a businesswoman to help those who are underserved. I can't wait for people to get to meet her.
Sandra McCracken.
Sandra, singer-songwriter that some of our listeners may be familiar with, from Nashville, someone who comes with the beauty of her artistic presentation, both as a performer, but also as a poet, and someone who knows what it means to suffer and who has lived through hard, challenging things and brings that suffering into the light of the music that she will also be providing for us.
David Bailey.
David, another friend of mine who lives in Richmond, who has supported a ministry, developed a ministry called Erebon that emphasizes the role that worship plays in bringing people of great diversity together under the lordship of Jesus. I think we're going to have a real sense of what it means for us to reimagine the role that worship can help us in telling our stories more differently.
Dan Allender.
Dan, a friend of mine, many of you will know that name from the world of psychology and from counseling, and he will be coming to share with us the beauty of storytelling and how the way we tell stories both informs and sustains our trauma, but how telling our stories differently leads us out of that trauma into a landscape of beauty and goodness. I can't wait, Pepper, for everybody to have an opportunity to be in the presence of all four of these really dynamic speakers and presenters, and just really looking forward to it.
What an amazing group of people. And of course, Kurt will be bringing his knowledge and wisdom to the event as well. And we are just so excited about it. It's going to be so good. Where is it going to be? At the Fairfax Church in Fairfax, Virginia. It's going to be October 24th and 25th of this year. And we have, for our Being Known podcast listeners, we have an exclusive deal for a limited time. Use the code KNOWN, K-N-O-W-N, for $25 off the ticket price. Tickets are on sale right now at thecbk.org, thecbk.org.
See you all there. Man, I can't wait.
It's going to be great.
You know, there is a passage in Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 16, where we hear the text read, "Thus says the Lord, stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths and where the good way lies, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it." This sense that to look at the ancient paths, to understand what does wisdom teach us about suffering? What does it mean for us to look suffering square in the eye, not to avoid it, not to run away? But it's not me. I'm not going to walk in that path. I'm going to do what I can to turn away from it. But then what I discover is that turning away from my suffering, somewhat counterintuitively, is really me turning away from God. Because that's where God takes up residence. Jesus is waiting for us in the rooms of our suffering. Jesus wants us to be hospitable to it. Jesus wants to be with us and explore our relationship with it, explore its nature, explore what the stories are that we're telling about ourselves that are all contained within that suffering. There's some features about suffering that are common. One of those features is that ultimately we are people who are anxious because of our terror of abandonment. And at the root of all suffering is this sense that we are going to experience what God said on the second page of the Bible was not good for us. It's not good for the man to be alone. Suffering is not just about my pain. Suffering is about my sense of experiencing pain in isolation. By myself. I use a couple of different domains of integration from the world of interpersonal neurobiology. We like to talk about these domains of integration, and suffering has a couple of different ways in which it occupies that. One has to do with what we call the temporal domain, the notion that I can tell time the way that I do. The fact that I'm aware, not just that I'm in pain, but that I can imagine tomorrow and the next week and the next month that I might still be in pain is what adds to my suffering, how I tell time like no other creature does. In addition, into this temporal domain, we add this narrative domain, the fact that I tell stories about what it's like for me a week from now and a month from now when my pain hasn't changed. And so these two domains, as humans, have us experiencing this thing we call suffering like no other creature does, because we can tell stories about it over the time that we imagine that's coming in the future, which only adds to how problematic it is. We like to talk about a definition of suffering. Many clinicians, and when you write and look at research on this, will say that there is pain, which is any distress that we experience physically, emotionally, psychologically. But pain experienced over time and our response to it is really what we are talking about when we talk about suffering. Suffering is our response to pain over time. But that response is deeply shaped by the time that I imagine and the story that I tell about it. We also like to talk about suffering as something that we experience generally in three different ways. There are three different categories, but we also say that these categories are ones of source contingency. Suffering is source contingent. And what does that mean? That means that it depends. To be contingent on something is to be dependent upon something. It's contingent upon these three categories. And one category is we suffer because of things that have happened to us.
Right.
Wendy had an experience in her family that she didn't ask for. She had an experience with her professor in which, yes, she was voluntarily participating in those sexual encounters, but we wouldn't expect a student to be in a position where that would even happen.
Right.
That's happening to her. There are things that happen to us. There are things that happen to me. But then we have a second category, and this by far is where so much of our suffering emerges from, and that has to do with what we do to ourselves. Wendy also told a story about herself. And the story that she told, quite non-consciously, was that no man is ever going to love me, really. The only way that I'm ever going to experience some sense of closeness, a sense of intimacy, is if I'm having sex with a man. But that's also something that's quite dangerous, so it's never something that I'm going to continue. I'm never ever going to be open to marrying a man. But this was a story that she was telling to herself about herself, and essentially doing something to herself. I think about, you know, I've maybe spoken here in other places about keeping a list of the people that I have to forgive. And the people that I'm forgiving are people that I've told a story about for many, many, many years. And I have created experiences within my own heart and mind that have everything to do with what I'm doing to myself. Many of us who are listening to this have experiences of trauma. And that trauma tells us that something has happened. But after the trauma, then I tell myself something about myself. And that's what's really difficult, because I'm actually collaborating with this story. Now, this is not to minimize what actually happened to me or the perpetrators who have mistreated me, but it is to make sure that we are aware that so much of how we suffer has everything to do with our own contribution to it. The third way that we suffer is that once we take into account the first two categories, once we allow Jesus to unclothe us, as it were, as was happening to Eustace when the scales of his outer skin were being peeled off and he was being given a new body. We suffer because we follow Jesus. We suffer because we are going to walk away from our addictions. We suffer because it's difficult to do the next good, right, hard thing. Ask any good athlete, ask any actor. I mean, I just always remember your experience with Burt Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's not like you were like, oh, I'll get up at 7 a.m. I'll work from about 9 to 5 and then I'll like go do what I want. No. Like there's a certain suffering that takes place in order for you to hone your craft.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
There is, yeah. And there is a suffering that takes place when a woman gives birth to a child. Oh. There is a certain suffering that takes place when we want to do the next act of beauty. These things are painful to do. Our becoming more like Jesus is a painful process. And then in addition to this, how many people, including Wendy, who when they decide that they're going to turn toward the light and do this work, find that the families in which they have been living, their families of origin, they resist this. And now there's more pain and more persecution coming.
Right.
Because the person is no longer willing to live according to the rules of the system. All of this comes in response to our following Jesus, and in so doing, actually coming to an awareness and sharing, as the scriptures tell us, sharing in his sufferings, such that we don't just have the sense that he gets us. We would have the sense that he could say to us, oh, now you get me. Because now you know what it's like to continue to walk on the path through the gate that are both narrow in order for you to become what you were born to be. This is the kind of suffering, this third form, that though we are being transformed by it, is not a suffering that will necessarily go away before we see Jesus. I don't like this idea, but we might say that this is what happens in this age. You know, the title of this chapter is The Story of the Present Age, this notion that we live in an age in which suffering is kind of like what makes sense in a world in which God's intention was one of such great beauty, and yet we've done to it what we've done. And in that sense, suffering, though, is not to be understood as the end of the story. And this is what Wendy was finding, that as much as she was saying, I can't do this anymore, what happened in that confessional community was for her to be seen, not unlike in our last episode, we talked about how Cheney was seen by others, others who could catch Wendy's gaze and say to her, this is really hard. This is really hard. And in her being receptive to others coming to find her in the pain of her suffering that was taking place because she was running toward the light, because she's doing the work, gives her a moment of transformation, even in that suffering. And we're going to see in the coming episodes how this practice of perseverance and so forth builds such that our experience of suffering itself is transformed and becomes part of how God is turning us into the people of joy and beauty that we long to be.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, per usual, we can't just let you walk away just by listening to the episode. We want to give you an assignment for the week. And that assignment is to make a list of the different ways that you experience your suffering, the things that have happened to you, the things that you have done to yourself, and the things that you suffer as a result of following Jesus. Be sure not to compare your life to others and so minimize or dismiss your suffering. This is a trap that a lot of us fall into. Be curious about what you usually do in response to the first two categories of your suffering. This will prepare us for the next step in considering how to suffer differently, even if our suffering does not go away. You know, Kurt, you mentioned earlier in the episode the temporal and the narrative domain, and I just wanted to let our listeners know that we, in season two, did a full season on the nine domains, and season two, episode 6 covers the narrative domain, and season two, episode 9 covers a temporal domain. So you may want to go back and listen to those two episodes. That full season is jam-packed with all kinds of information on the nine domains of integration. And as Kurt will tell you, they have nothing to do with Kevin Bacon. That's another story for another time. Kurt, thank you so much for this work. Appreciate you. Love you.
Thanks, you, man. Yeah, love you too.
Stick around, folks, on YouTube. We are going to be joining Amy here in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to have a post-show discussion.
This podcast is produced by Kurt Thompson, Pepper Sweeney, and myself, Amy Chella. Audio production and editing is by Keaton Simons. Video production and editing is by Mark Gould. Speaking of videos, each week we post the video version of every episode to our YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube by going to youtube.com or your app and searching Being Known Podcast. If you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on social media at Being Known Pod. If you like this podcast, tell a friend. Tell all of your friends. And please like, rate, and review. Be well, be known.